When it comes to your sales stack, stop tool hopping and start winning with Nux. Simplify your outbound today at nux.ai/salesgravy. That's nooks.ai/salesgravy.
This is the Sales Gravy Podcast. Hi, I'm Jeb Blunt, best-selling author of Fanatical Prospecting, Objections, Sales EQ, and Inked, and I'm here to help you open more doors, close bigger deals, and rock your commission check.
Welcome, Harriet, to the Sales Gravy Podcast. It's absolutely wonderful to have you back with us again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So I want to jump right into it. I want to know, how did you get your start in tech and like SaaS sales in that world?
Ooh, well, I fell into it. I wasn't on the hunt. I wasn't ready, you know, let's go into this role and find this industry. I was an events organizer and then managed to get myself a role in a tech company doing events, which was like the Google-esque. And we had a slide that went outside and really cool things. And so I was let loose there and kind of found my feet in other roles and helped them grow the business and sort out some of the different departments, and then landed in sales, which the CEO always wanted me to do. And I was over my dead body, was my vibe at the time. And then the more I got to know the company and the organization, the impact, the more I wanted to help them have that impact wider. And that's essentially what sales is. So worked with them, grew an outbound sales team, and then moved to Australia and then forged the cybersecurity path that I have today.
Oh, that's awesome. And I love your background in events, you know, like especially being in the tech and like SaaS space. That's a much more complex sales cycle. So I'm sure there's a lot of skills that you developed and with your events background that contributed to that. So what might some of those things be that you were able to pull over into sales?
Yeah, I think for me, the piece was the confidence piece around dealing with people. And I didn't go to university, so I was young going into a workforce. And, you know, I was 16 and I had 3 jobs, and then I was a nanny, and then I went into all these other roles. So I've done everything. And so I think for me, coming into that event role was that I was running events all over the UK. So I did about 150, 160 events a year, which is a lot when you break it down into how many per week. And I was jumping in a car and I had this big Chrysler, like slidey door job. And then I had to stand up in front of all the delegates and present, you know, who was going to be speaking that day. And that was new for me. And I've always been confident, but not in a position of standing up in front of people. And I remember the sweaty kind of palms, and now I do it in front of thousands and don't even think about it. So it was really where I forged, I think, my confidence. And the translation into the technical of the so many moving parts was being able to understand something and make it relevant to other people. And that's what we have to do in sales. It doesn't matter if it's technical, you know, technical, or if it's something that's a bit more complex or even not. Our job is to make everybody understand what it is that we do and how we do it, so that people can refer us and translate it and understand where it impacts. So for me, I think there's been a multitude of reasons or things that I've done that have impacted the way that I sell today, especially in a technical space.
That's really cool. I was having a conversation earlier today, and the person that I was talking to, I stopped for a second. I'm like, okay, this is about to get really technical, what I'm going to explain. You know, stop me if we need to, but let's start here. And, you know, it's just definitely understanding your audience and finding that line of how to translate. It's almost like sitting down with a doctor sometimes. They have all the, you know, medical terminology that they're using, and you're just sitting there going, what? Huh?
Yeah. What does that mean for me?
Yes.
And those things, are they bad? Are they something I should do? And if it was your child or your daughter or your friend, what would you recommend? And it definitely comes back. I remember there's a salon, and they had 7 salons across Western Australia. And I knew her through a friend, and she said, oh, we need Wi-Fi in our location. Now that's not really technical, but it was, you know, we need Wi-Fi. And so I said, look, I'm going to come out, I'm going to bring one of my engineers, and we're going to figure out how many you need. Cause her idea was, I'm just going to buy, you know, three for each space. And this is how we'll roll it out. But when you've got doors and frames and metal and all those things, you have to know more about it. And so I was there as the translator almost between the engineer that knows all the technical stuff and just wants to be technical, because it also makes people feel, if you can speak your own language of the thing that you do and somebody's like, wow, I didn't know all of that, and that's totally above my head, that can almost feel quite cool, when actually I think it does the opposite. And something that the owner of the salon said was, she said, I can do the same thing to you that you're doing to me in skin.
Yes.
And she said, I can talk about all the different, and she listed all these words I've never heard of before. And it was such a great scenario for me to be part of, because I already knew it, but to have the example where you've got this engineer that's doing his best and trying to get this thing to work, but if they can't translate it, you can sell all you want, but if when it comes down to it, the person implementing it makes you feel like an idiot, you're not going to buy from them.
Oh, absolutely. And that's like the worst position to be in as a buyer and a seller. Like, you want to understand just exactly what it is you're investing in. And as a seller, you want to be as clear as possible. No, I love that. So I guess my next question for you is, in terms of sales cycles, walk me through the tech sales cycles. As closest I've gotten to tech is I was in telecom sales for a while. So again, depending on your client, it kind of determines, you know, the level of complexity. And at least the sales cycle for us in there, it was usually pretty short. It wasn't too long, but if you don't mind going into that.
Yeah, of course. So I would say in general, just to generalize, it's about 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. It can be, I would say on average, if you get the right place, right time, or if you're not replacing technology with a new technology or a new service, that could be anything from, you know, if they're reviewing it now, it could be a renewal in 3 to 6 months, but it could be an outbound conversation that then has turned into, look, we'll review again, but we've got 2 years left on our contract. It's dependent on that. And I think today we're very rarely going in sharing something mind-breakingly different. We're still using firewalls and we're replacing a firewall. There are new softwares often coming out that's security related, and obviously AI is out there. So all of those, they tend to be something new. And so all we're doing is matching against budget. And the challenge with tech is the budget, or cybersecurity, the budget is just constantly going up. And I think we could probably say that for most things, but it's always going up and it's always the thing that keeps people up at night. And so you could then say, well, the cost of leasing cars is going up. Yeah, but you can deal with an old car. You know, it's not going to be the end of the world. But if you keep with old technology, it could be the difference between a breach or somebody hacking and holding it ransom. There's so much at stake. So sales cycles tend to be a bit longer. And so therefore you want a pipeline that supports that, mm-hmm. and to be mindful of how you're going to go to market, because I've seen it where I've had, especially people coming from advertising that's quick. Do you want to be on that billboard? If you want to be on that billboard by now, versus we need to go and have a conversation. We need to consult and we need to qualify. And then we design a solution. It's like building or buying a house. It's going to take a bit longer. And because you're not necessarily going straight into something that's already there, I've now got to build it and design it and make those decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why it takes a little bit longer in this industry.
Oh, I love that. And I like how you put it, to design the solution, which is, you know, a consultative approach mm-hmm. in the process and selling, which is actually a style of selling that I prefer. Because one, I like to really learn about my clients, but I also want to make sure that solution is specifically tailored to their needs. You know, I've seen it before where people have said, I have all this extra stuff and I don't need it. So it happens more than, you know, we care to see. But yeah, no, I love that. I love the design of it. So my next question is going to be, what's kind of like your philosophy in your own style of selling?
So for me, I also love a consultative sales approach. And I wonder if it's more female driven. I would be interested to know what you think of that, because we are naturally nurturers and, you know, we're like, tell us about it and give me all the insights. And so I think for me, my philosophy has always definitely been around that consultative, tell me more, let me understand everything, and then we can find a path. The thing I think I've always done really well, which has helped me get to where I am today, has been in that qualification, I've usually uncovered 5, 6, 7 opportunities, but I've only ever driven one to begin with. And so that's been my approach of, if you tell me everything, I'm going to find more than one thing in here. And then when I find more than one thing, I'm then going to work with you to figure out what could we do first. And what happens then is that we uncover, we draw back the curtain, and then we have a conversation to determine what will have the biggest impact for you. We get an opportunity to work together in something quite small before we do the next thing. And so we start to build trust. And then from that trust, we can do more together. And I think that for me is just coming around back to the what's in it for the client. And that's what I really care about. Maybe in more of a fortunate position now, or was especially in the later days of being in tech sales, is that I didn't need the sale because I made so much money. It didn't really matter. So it wasn't, I was no longer driven by the money, but it was driven by, can I have an impact? And therefore, if I couldn't, I would then say, look, I don't know if I'm the best because you want this and I work in this way with these people or with this technology. So can I recommend somebody else? Or do you mind if I just don't throw my hat in the ring this time? And what I found it does is just make people want you more, which is not really what I was doing, because I'd still say no and still have to be like, I'm really sorry, I still can't, you know, don't want to or can't support you. But by doing that, it then meant that I could really approach it very naturally. And also if I found, because you just mentioned before that, you know, people walk away, feel like they've got all this stuff that they don't really need. Mm-hmm. For me, I would go in as a consultant, really, without being there, to then say, well, if you already have this technology and it already does a lot for you, why don't we just help you use it better? Because if you can leverage the technology you already have, you're not having to spend any more money other than maybe some implementation or some support costs. It's going to have a bigger impact on your organization. And that's what I care about, not about, do you want to buy my next solution or do the next thing?
Yeah.
Because that will come and it might not be you, it might be your friend or it might be your colleague. But that's really the integrity approach that I guess really I drive.
No, I love that. You know, something occurred to me while you were explaining all that you're almost simultaneously building your pipeline, but also a very strong referral network.
Yeah.
Which I think is a beautiful thing. And I got to be honest, I think referrals, salespeople don't take advantage enough of asking for referrals. In one of our earlier conversations, you had mentioned that every time you come to a client, you're getting more referrals from them. And that is just a fabulous approach. It is such a great way to, again, build out that network. It strengthens your pipeline, especially with the longer sales cycles. So with that said, what are some things that you do to nurture those clients through the longer sales cycles, especially if they already have an existing contract? Because I ran into that quite a bit. And, you know, these contracts are usually multiple years. So what did you do to help yourself stand out in those situations?
Love this question. Yes. This is definitely good for me. Thank you, Ashley.
You're welcome.
For the how do we keep in touch, it's the number one thing I think people miss out. And salespeople, we're driven for the now. And if we're so driven by a number that is almost kind of out of reach each time, we're scrambling for that next thing. And so for me, if I speak to somebody and they say it's 24 months till we can actually do something, related to what I've reached out to, and sometimes that's not always just the only thing that we can do, but it's the reason why we're in that meeting or having that conversation. What I'm doing there is using all the tools that I have at my disposal. So 24 months time, cool, that's on this date. So I block that in. I know that that's happening. So 24 months time, the future me will thank now me for, for thinking about this. So I've blocked it in. I know what's happening. I then work backwards because I want to remain front of mind, recent and frequent. So the easiest way for me to do that is connect with them on LinkedIn. And then I just post regularly. So now you're going to see me without really me having to reach out. And it's that one to many. So great. Tick that box. I know when it's happening and I've got my LinkedIn thing happening. The next piece that I then do is then look at the dates of when I'd want to check in. So it's not just a, hey, it's been 3 months, how are you? It's a reason. So it's finding something. And if you are new, you may not know what that reason's going to be, but in 3 months' time, you'll know what the reason is. And so future you will be better than who you are today. So if we book that in, then for every 12 weeks, I have a reminder set of think of something or think of a reason to connect is often all my reminder will say, if I don't know enough about them. And then therefore my next piece will then be, okay, this is what I'm going to speak to them about, or we've just closed this client, or we've now got an event on that we didn't have 3 months ago. So now I can talk about that. And things will happen where they'll come back into my mind, but we don't want to rely on memory because we'll drop the ball on something because we're human and we've got a million things to do. And you want hundreds in your pipeline. You don't want 10. You want hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the next 2 years to speak to and engage and opportunities to develop. So I've got my date, I've got my LinkedIn, and then I've got my reminder. And that's really all I need at this stage because other stuff will come up. And then the second, or the I guess really the fourth piece, but the second side to that is connecting with other people in the organization because not everyone makes a decision about everything that you offer.
Yes.
Depends on your industry, depends on what you do. But for me, in this industry, I'm looking at people that are other decision makers in other departments. And so even if we look at sales training, it might come from sales, but it might come from marketing and it might come from revenue or finance. So it depends on who's driving what. So if I connect with everybody and they all start to see my content and then they see that I'm connected with their head of sales or their head of, you know, IT, they're going to then ask that person, who is that person and who are they? And oh, we need this. Shall I reach out? And then they're happy to do the introduction because they want to be the big guy. And they want to be that I know her and I know him. And so that starts to happen. And so without me having to do very much, just every 12 weeks, think of something, reason to engage. That's it. Everything else starts to fall into place. And the more I learn about them and the more I learn about myself and about what's going on with my clients, the more value I can add over the 2 years.
Oh, I love that. I mean, you're leveraging those relationships in such a wonderful way that they almost become your partner in pursuing the other divisions that are available with the opportunity. And that's also an area where I think people tend to miss is like the other opportunity that's there, the expansion for it. And that's for sales and account managers. Like, look into it, connect. We do a really good job of connecting with our clients and other individuals and organizations, but you know, leveraging the relationships that you already have and treating it like that partnership is just beautiful. That's a great way to approach it.
Yeah. And it feels authentic because I think that's the piece we often miss in sales is that we're not just selling. It's not, the goal isn't here to sell. It's that we're just human to human. And so if we are just normal, and that may also be the challenge is that if you're not normally, you know, that way inclined or conversational or consultative, it's probably going to feel quite inauthentic. And so maybe you have to find the right industry and the right way to approach it. But it's normal. It's the way that, you know, if we've connected, we went out for dinner last night, we're on LinkedIn and we've talked about hobbies and we've talked about life. And so if something comes up, I'm not going to have a reminder that says, think of something to send to Ashley. But if something pops up and I think of a conversation we had, it's going to take me straight back there. And I'm naturally going to send you something because it will just feel that that's what I should be doing. But there's no sale goal at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Absolutely. How I naturally yeah. communicate. And that's how I build relationships. So I think it was also about finding the path that suits your personality and the way that you communicate. And so for some, you might have to go a bit more. For some, you might have to pull it back. It's just dependent on how you want to show up and who you are.
I totally agree with that. You know, I had a client earlier this week that they are in learning and development for their company, but she's absolutely fabulous at reporting. Like, she does a phenomenal job. And so there was an article that came to my inbox and I read it and I was like, wow, this is really cool information. I sent it to her and was just genuinely like, hey, I'm working on this right now, but what are your thoughts about this information out of this? And so it was just a totally organic, genuine conversation. And, you know, on the other hand, you know, I shared with you that I'd started in automotive sales. So of course this is B2C. But sometimes you end up with people that aren't ready to buy a car that day, and it's going to take several months. And in those approaches, it was more, I would put notes into the CRM about, you know, birthdays, if they had grandchildren that were playing sports, those sort of things, and then do the same thing. I would set a reminder, come back, and just have a more genuine conversation with them. And I wouldn't necessarily talk about the car. I would just say, hey, just thinking about you today. And then that resulted in me having clients that were loyal to myself and not necessarily the company that I was working with. So it's interesting in both sides of it, how that plays out.
And that's so interesting because I imagine companies wouldn't be super happy with that.
Yeah.
Because I was the same in my role because people buy from people. Mm-hmm. And so this is what happens. Someone leaves and they follow them, especially if you stay in that industry. Yes. And even if you don't, but they've still a way for them to engage with you, they will still follow you there. I've got a friend in sales over here who I've been staying with, and she just got a meeting that she's been trying to get for so long, and somebody moved into a different role and she got her meeting. And so that's come from remembering who they are and being mindful about the things that they care about, because that's what makes the impact and that's how we make people feel great. And interestingly, I would talk about buying cars or people selling cars as analogies, as well as selling houses. But I know when I went to look at a car a couple of years ago, I have two Labradors. Okay. They're my life. Like, there's, you know, people that have listened to me before, it's all I talk about, as well as a bit of sales. And so for me, I wanted a car that could withstand two Labradors, that they can jump in the back, that we can still have luggage, you know, all the stuff that's important to me. And so for me, it would be, you know, seats that can't be slobbered on or seats that won't rip when my Labrador decides to jump in the back rather than in the boot and all those things. But it's very, I've never had anybody sell me the right car because they don't pick up on the things that I've given them. And obviously, I mean, I'm a sales geek, so I'm just looking at people like, tell me all the things I want to hear.
Yes.
And I find it so interesting that I don't think that's common. And that's obviously why we do what we do and why we have these companies doing it. But it's there because we think differently. But it's definitely a missed opportunity for so many to stand out from the crowd. And all it takes is just to listen, make a couple of notes, and people will feel like you care when it comes right around. But you genuinely do, because that's what you do naturally anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's just such a huge advantage when you're going into these things. So everybody has that one client or that one deal that stands out to them, good or bad. But I want to know, what is your favorite deal that you have ever closed? And then your most challenging deal that you've ever closed? They can be the same thing.
Yeah. Okay. So favorite and challenging. I would say, I reckon one of the most challenging was just down to time, I think. And that was just, it was a long game, but they became my highest paying client. Over the years, and I still talk about them very fondly today. And it was one I remember going out, and they were with somebody else, and they were all good. But the guy was so nice that he took my meeting, and we had a good chat, and got to know him a bit more. And I just found the opportunities to just re-engage him again, and come back round and find things to kind of share with him and invite him to. And eventually, it was actually because the other provider, they actually turned up in a Porsche. I found this hilarious. They actually turned up in a Porsche to a meeting, which I don't know what it's like. Do people make comments on what cars people drive for your clients? Have you had that?
You know, not necessarily for our clients. Definitely when I was in automotive, we certainly had some opinions.
Okay.
But that was also a good stage to learn not to judge a book by its cover.
Yes.
Because I had a very high profile customer that lives around here. And when he walked on the lot, he was in a Hawaiian shirt and gym shorts, had a whole team with him, but everybody else refused to talk to him because they were like, no way this guy's going to buy a car. He bought four cars in one day.
Oh, wow. So, yes. Wow. Exactly. Yes. So there's that there. But what it looks like from the other side is that a lot, and I hear this a lot, I thought it was mainly big in the UK, but I have seen it a little bit in Australia as well, is that this their provider rocked up in a Porsche, and the CFO saw. And so he then went into the IT guy and said, cut every quote that he gives us down by 20% or we're not doing it. And because in his head, he was thinking, well, they're just charging us too much, mm-hmm. which it blows my mind still to this day that that's how, and people do still think like that, and that's up to them. But that was what happened. That ball got dropped in so many words. And so I was able to come in and showcase and build it through. And I think actually there was an example which I can probably share, which was challenging. It was actually probably one of the only times I've ever cried about a sale, because I'm never that connected to the outcome. But it was more about the situation and the same client. And I remember quoting, we've been working with him for a number of years, quoted a solution that had taken long time to design. We've got a specialist involved. We delivered it. We were told that we were going to win this. And they ended up on the Friday. I'm waiting. I'm in the office before, because we go to the pub at lunchtime on a Friday. And I'm in the office waiting for this purchase order to come in. Nothing. So I ring him and I'm like, hey, are we still getting this? Oh, yeah, sorry. We've given the purchase order to somebody else.
That's crushing.
It was like a punch in the stomach. And I remember I was just on the phone, sat at my desk. And I said, sorry, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, we got another quote and it was cheaper. It was better than yours. And I was so astounded by the fact that A, it hadn't been communicated, but B, somebody that could beat me because I had deal registration, which means you're protected and you've got this pricing. I'm like tearing up on the phone. I was like, okay, all right, I'll speak to you next week, and hung up, and I burst into tears, and the procurement manager's behind me, and he came over and gave me a hug, like awkwardly. And he goes, well, at least we know you're human. So he said to me. So there we go. Everyone learned that, you know, I do have feelings. But then after that, the way I turned it around was I then spoke to our rep from the vendor. I spoke to a couple of other people that have been involved, and I said, how has this happened? Because I never put anything as a done deal until I know it's a done deal. And this was a done deal. And so in the end, spoke to the rep. They looked at the quote that was provided by the other partner and said it was different. And so I was able to go back. I contacted our client and said, hey, just ahead, can you just send me the quote that you went with? And just because I would love to learn from it, because I'm, you know, you either win or you learn. So I'm all about learning. So he sent me through the quote. We spoke to the rep. They said, yeah, it's completely different. And they'd missed out three key things that the client had asked for. And it was extension of the maintenance and management around the licensing. It was a certain size of capacity and a couple of other things. So I was able to then contact, because of the relationship I had, I was able to reach out and say, just so you, like, that's, you know, look, I'm not bitter. It's all, you know, if you have genuinely found another solution that suits you better, I'll fully stand by it and I will learn from this. However, there was three things that you highlighted, and these are the three things, and they're not included in the proposal that you are signing off on. And he didn't know that. And So he then went back and had a look at it with his team. And then I got the purchase order. So I won it back, clawed it back, because I fought for what I believed to be true. And I think a lot of people will fight for what's true, but not necessarily with any backing from it, or not be prepared to lose. And I'm okay with losing if I'm not the best option. But if I'm the best option, I'm not okay with losing. And so it's really just finding those pieces. So I think most challenging to get, but most challenging one that I was able to achieve. But I think, I mean, there's so many of those. But now, I mean, I don't know. I think now, I remember speaking to a guy just recently, and he needed something quite quickly, but it was a big requirement. And I said, oh gosh, I'd be a bit of a challenge to hit that deadline. And he said, well, nothing great comes easy. And and I thought it was such a great thing for a client to say, yeah, now a client. It was worth the late nights pulling everything together. And I think now it's, you know, I like a challenge because, you know, as the more sales you do, the better you get at it,
yes,
the less challenging it becomes. And I have had that reflection over the last few years of, what do I want to do and what does light me up? Because some stuff is quite easy for me now. And although that's not saying I'm definitely not complacent, but it's not as challenging as it used to be. But then I do get the ones that challenge me, and I'm so grateful for them because it just makes me a better salesperson, a better trainer, a better human.
No, I love that. There's always growth opportunity, and that's something that I've always enjoyed. I've never necessarily looked at a lost sale as a failure, but it's same as you, like always a learning opportunity. Where can I get better? And sometimes it is like back to the basics of maybe I didn't ask the best qualifying questions or the discovery questions. Maybe I just hit the mark, you know, just off just a bit. Sometimes it's timing. Maybe I took a little bit too much time putting this proposal together, but absolutely it's always like learning it and moving forward from it. So I think that was wonderful. I love that you won that deal and turned it back around.
Yeah,
like,
<I know. laughs>
So I'll take that as you're an extremely competitive person to boot.
I am a little bit competitive. But all done in jest, We had a client for outbound, and it was a different, because with all of the team that we have doing lead development, it was a different client. It was new, and they hadn't actually signed up for lead development, but we generated some leads through a marketing and sales as a service piece that we'd done for them. And I like to prove points on things. I like to prove that you know, what we've done is right, or, you know, give people the next step up. I love giving more than what people expect. So we'd had these leads, and so I just said to the team, guys, let's just ring them, because that's not what they've paid for, but let's have some fun. And so we got these leads and we divvied them out across the team, and we wrote a quick pitch. It was not the way we normally, we'd spend so much time training our team on each individual requirement that this is not usually how we do it, but it was quick. It was a really simple message. And I said, I'll do it with you. And so there was nothing that got the team more engaged than having to compete against me, because they know what I'm like. But I got two meetings like really quickly, and the two of them are scrambling. They're asking me, you know, how did you do it? What did you say? Tell me exactly what you just said, because I want to do it again. And then in the end, I think one of the guys got three, and then I then didn't want to lose out on being, you know, two, but I'd kind of hung up my hat at that point. So went back and did it again. But it's all a bit of fun. And I love to see other people win. And that's why I think I've chosen what it is that I do, because it's so rewarding to see other people win. Mm-hmm. And so great to see that smile on their face. And so I'm not a sore loser, but I do love a bit of competition.
Oh, no, I love that. And you know, that I think in some sales roles that I've been in, that's a part of it that's been missing, is that the competition was more a negative environment than positive and like healthy and fun like that. Certainly when I have been in those atmospheres, quite honestly, when I've been the most successful in sales, And then also being able to almost team sell in some instances, like those are typically the teams that if my plate was super full and I needed help from another salesperson on the team, they jumped right in with me. And it was beautiful. Everybody was successful. Everybody won. The client won. We won. Those are my absolute favorite times in sales.
Yeah. And that takes a certain culture, doesn't it, to generate that? Because I know there's a lot, and where did I see, there was something I saw recently about this topic, and it was on around like, how do you get your team engaged enough to sell without constantly questioning what was their deal and what percentage are they getting? And I find it so fascinating when people are in on a deal, they're helping, and then the question is, well, what clip do I get on that? It doesn't work. I mean, it might work like that, but you're doing it to help somebody else and they're going to help you in return. And I also believe in good karma. So, you know, that's also going to, be at play, but it definitely makes for a more cohesive space. And I think, you know, for me, I love working and collaborating. I mean, I'm here, I love collaborating, and I don't really believe in competition. It's not something that I really care about or think about too often. And I would much rather collaborate, than do nothing at all. And so if I have an opportunity, if there's somebody that's out there that, you know, especially in if they're local in the market to where we are, and they want an insight or they want to know more, they want a connection to a certain person, absolutely. I've got sales trainers that refer work to me all the time. I've got people in the sales world that I refer to all the time, because I can't serve everybody. I don't want to help everybody. So if they're not right for me, they're probably going to be right for somebody else. And now I've got a couple of people that are just, you know, if I'm qualifying it out, I will then say, look, that's not a me thing. Like, I can absolutely help you, but if you want the best, go work with this person. I do an introduction, they close it straight away because I've already done the work for them. Mm-hmm. And I don't take rebates on that. I don't take clips on that referral work, because it means that I'm not authentically recommending.
And
I think that is also something key to share, is that if you're getting somebody to do it, it's got to be done because from a place of, I want to help you.
No, I love that. I have absolute mad respect for that. And that's, you know, we were talking about that even last night, like that's some of the culture just professionally that I really enjoy seeing develop here is just being able to refer like that and just work together. It's better for everybody. I see signs all the time that say better together, and that's absolutely true.
Is absolutely true. And if you think like technologies and different things like that, it's all, they can connect together and they can do great things. Mm-hmm. We'll do it together, become an alliance, become a force, because then you've got your circle of people that rave about you and talk about you in rooms that you're not in. And that is so much better than trying to hold everything back and not say anything about anything else that's going on in case that you might sneak in and take it away from me. If you're the better person, go for it.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. What's something people in your industry would find surprising to learn about you?
I think the most surprising thing people always take is that I'm a tomboy at heart. So I ride motorbikes, I sail, I do all the fun stuff. And I think that's always the bit that people are like, what, you rode across Australia and you did this thing and you lived here and you do that. I think that's always the bit. And, you know, we had this conversation, yesterday, is that I present well. And so they can't imagine me being like dusty faced and, you know, in boots and jumping on the two wheel motorbike. But I love doing things that are adventurous and interesting. And I think that's probably the bit that people don't really know. I reckon maybe the second thing would be that I quite like my own space. So I travel a lot on my own and I love it. I love people and I get energy from other people, but I also really love my own time. And I think people don't realize that because I'm on and I love people and I'm always in with everybody, that they can't imagine I would ever want to be on my own. But I also like that. So me on two wheels is just perfect.
I absolutely relate to that, because growing up, there is actually a picture of me when I was younger where I had on this super frilly dress, but I was sitting in the mud just playing and like,
perfect.
It was great. Yeah. And my family, so you like dirt bikes. So I am four wheeler quads type person. My family has a farm up in Pennsylvania. We went to visit 1 year and they have all the toys up there. So like some of my cousins, they're all mostly guys. I was one of like three girls out there. We come back up to the house and apparently all of my rest of my family's talking about, oh, all the guys are going to be so muddy. I was covered head to toe. I was the only one covered head to toe. My mom goes, oh, she found a mud hole.
I hope you did that, the stripes across the face. Yes, with the mud.
It did. And the best part about it was like that following week I had figure skating competitions, oh, so national. So, you know, playing out on the farm one week and then competing in rhinestones the next. So both
that
sides.
I love that that's what you do. I just picture this elegance of, because it is so elegant. And I think I'm not very elegant. So, I mean, I'd love to give it a go. but I love that. I think, you know, you need the contrast. Otherwise, you know, it's either all or it's nothing, or it's this or it's that. And I think you can have a bit of both. And it just makes life a bit more interesting. Conversations a bit more interesting. Otherwise, just same, same.
Exactly. Well, and selling, having stories are super important. They help relate, help build rapport, and, you know, it contributes to that. So.
Yeah.
So how did you get your podcast started?
That is a great question. I have to think back. So we've been doing it now for just over 3 years. And I remember at the time thinking, I'm going to do a podcast. I just thought it was a great way to give back to my clients. It was a great way to share content. We weren't on YouTube then. We had Instagram, which is not where our clients are. And we had LinkedIn, obviously. So LinkedIn was kind of our thing. We had a lot of content going out for our clients. We were creating videos and we had universities and platforms and all these things. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I was missing a place to share information. And so I'm a big podcast listener. Like, all I do is listen to podcasts. So I'm driving to work and I have one on. I'm doing stuff around the house. I've got it on. It's just, I'm always consuming. I probably shouldn't do as much of that, but I'm always consuming content. So, and I love it. And I find it so interesting. So I thought, well, if I could give something back, then I think it would be a great way to do it. And it's a platform and it's audio and I can kind of do it from anywhere. So that was where it started. I think I decided I was going to do it once a fortnight, maybe sometimes once a week, but I knew consistency was going to be key. So I spent ages figuring out the name, Cassell Like You. I should probably give credit. I can't remember who it was that came up with it. It wasn't me. And it was great. And I worked with this small agency and they created the opening and the music and all these things. And then I just started talking on this podcast and I got people in and I got some people in that were different to sales, but talked about sales. They might have been my past clients. And that was kind of where it started. And I think I was about 3 months in and thought, oh, okay, this is a thing. Like, I'm going to now have to do this every week. And I remember seeing the, you know, the listener numbers, like they were low. I can't remember how many there were, but I remember I just kept doing it. And then about 6 months in, my friend's little girl realized I was on Spotify and thought I was the coolest thing ever. Still to this day, she thinks I'm cool, which I will take. And so she put Spotify on and put it on the TV while we're all there having dinner. And I was so embarrassed. I was like, please, can we turn it off? Because I don't want to listen to myself.
Yep.
That minute, you know, I'm there and in my picture, I've got my arms folded. I look real fancy. And that was kind of really where I thought, wow, okay, this is a thing. And now people know about it. And then we did a big billboard in the Perth city centre. And that was really fun to just see my face on this huge billboard. Lots of things happening. But since doing it, I think for me, it was started out as just a bit of an idea just to share content. Now I still want to share content. That's what I do. And I bring people on. But I've found over the years that I'm so particular about who I want on there, because I listen to so many podcasts and I get ideas. And sometimes I think about, you know, kind of making it more fluid around what we talk about. But I think people listen to it because it's sales related. It's not business. It's not. And sometimes it's a bit business because it's my story and it's what I've got going on. But I try and keep it very sales focused. And yeah, 3 years now doing it weekly. This month, though, we've done it fortnightly. And I have to apologize to my editor, but I just haven't had the time. And that's not usually something you'll ever hear me say. Mm-hmm. But to do it properly, and I think that's the other thing, is that I've taken, whereas back in the day, it was just done, tick, move on. Now it's okay, people are listening and they're all over the world and they care about what I've got to say, which is awesome, but also terrifying at the same time. And so, yeah, so now we do it every week, and we're leveling up the way that we do it. We're not quite at the sales gravy level because this is epic. the amount of work that goes into it, and all the cameras and the lights, and one day I'll have this. But it's been a journey. But I think for me, it was just really about adding value, which is a lot of how I make a lot of decisions.
No, I love that. And you know, speaking of content, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in our studios this week. So I know all of our listeners are going to be really excited to dig into your content as it starts releasing on Sales Gravy University. So thank you again. And then you just said something interesting about your podcast, that you also started it to like give back to your clients. I think that's an interesting take, and to know that you had some of them on there, I think that is a beautiful way to do it. Like, I can see that it's brought you a lot of joy, and I think that's clear in a lot of the success that you've had. It's just, you've just dug in and started. And I think that's the hardest part for a lot of people, is that they're just scared to take that leap, and you've done it. So,
yeah. Oh, thank you. And I think people are afraid, and if I can add this one piece, is that you put your head above the line, and you pop up, and it happens on LinkedIn. It happens when you make a move in a business, or start a business, or release a podcast, or do a YouTube video. And people will tell you not to do it. They will mock the situation. They will be like, oh, saw that post on LinkedIn, or that podcast. Oh, that was, yeah, interesting. And I'm still blown away that people still have opinions like that on something where someone's given something a go. And so I just think the great things happen when you are outside of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And so for me, creating something that challenged me, as I said before, I need more things that challenge me, because you get good at something and you become a little bit complacent, or maybe, but you want things to challenge you. And so for me, I think putting myself out there, flying over here and doing the content, you know, for the last few days, it's something different, and it's not something that everyone gets an opportunity to do, but I've been extremely fortunate to do it, and I will keep popping my head up above the line and see what awesome things come from it.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Sales Gravy Podcast.
Thank you.
Nooks brings prospecting, emailing, and parallel dialing into one single workflow. Their AI agents handle the busy work so your reps can focus on what matters, live conversations. Stop wasting up to 80% of the day stitching tools together and start hitting your numbers with Nooks. Go to nooks.ai to see how artificial intelligence plus human intelligence equals more pipeline. That's nooks.ai, N-O-O-K-S.ai.